Well, how do we translate an event that happened 2,000 years ago into our frenetic modern day? Father Bernard O'Connor, an official with the Pontifical Congregation for Eastern Churches, sat down with me and an unforgettable Ella Fitzgerald for a fireside chat.
We three kings of Orient are bearing gifts, we traverse the far.
Epiphany literally means manifestation, a showing forth of God's revelation and truth. And so the various kinds of epiphanies known in biblical history and church history, especially during the time of Jesus, were what was often celebrated. Only a little later did we start celebrating the visit of these interesting strangers from what it was probably present-day Persia. And it becomes very interesting to see what their mission was, what they was said about them, and because of their total self-giving and embarking on a difficult pilgrimage to find divine truth.
We spoke earlier in December about Christmas, December 25th, as being Christmas Day when one exchanges presents with the family and so on. Mm-hmm. But here in Italy, that was a practice, at least until just a few years ago, that was done on January 6th, the Feast of the Epiphany.
Well, of course, in certain parts of the Eastern churches, what we call Epiphany is actually their Christmas, January 6th, depending on whether that their areas follow the Julian calendar or we follow the Gregorian calendar. So what you're seeing here is a little bit of a mixture of two calendar systems, both of which coexisted for long periods in the history of Italy, and both of which have left their mark. So it's very appropriate that on January 6th, those who follow the Gregorian calendar are still attentive that we're in the Christmas season, and in fact, Christmas Day for the Easterns. So let's keep within the Christmas season in the Gregorian tradition and introduce at least an aspect of Christmas, namely the visitation of the Magi.
I celebrate with my children both Christmas Day and the Epiphany in a smaller way. And with my children on Christmas Day, I say it's baby Jesus' birthday today. And instead of receiving so many presents from Santa Claus that we forget about baby Jesus' birthday, it's also time to give him something. And what can we give him is perhaps of ourselves. And at the same time, on the Epiphany, we remember the wise men bearing gifts to the Christ child.
I think this is a wonderful approach. I very strongly encourage it. And I'm happy to tell you, Tracy, that there are quite a number of families which do see the Christmas gift of the season in a multiple number of phases. Imagine a coin with two sides. Well, the Nativity is one side, the Epiphany is another side. They're both giving us different aspects of the same message of the good news come to earth.
Born a king on Bethlehem's plain, gold I bring to crown him again, king forever, ceasing never over us all to reign.
One of the things that I would recommend you may want to encourage as a family custom, take your children on a little walk. Take them around the area and show them different scenes that are important to the culture, the history of the area, but also show them scenes that are very important for the history of their church tradition here. And say, just as when we went out walking, we went in search of things that are important to us and to our family and to our history. Well, the Magi went on a search too. They took a walk, so to speak. They wanted to know what was most significant in their world, and they believed that to be the Messiah, the Christ figure, the person of Jesus, whom we celebrate, of course, on December 25th. But the fact of their search and their sacrifice to search, we can symbolize that with children. We can symbolize it with adults, too.
It's rather a sad moment, the Epiphany, because it's the time also that we start bringing down the nativity scenes and we start bringing down the Christmas tree and so on. But you're right. Usually before Christmas, I take my kids around to the various churches in my neighborhood. And here in Italy, many of the creche scenes and nativity scenes in these old churches are hundreds of years old.
Exactly.
And they're each one is so individual, so charming, so beautiful. They're lit up at night, and you have the water running, and the little fire is going. They are a very special pilgrimage for my children ahead of Christmas. So it is rather sad at the Epiphany to look back on these things and know that we have to wait another year.
I think it's very unfortunate. You'll notice that the creche in St. Peter's Square and the Christmas trimmings, as it were, within the Vatican itself, tend to stay up until much, much later, into February. But certainly all through Christian history, we've known of the 12 days of Christmas. This was not 12 days before Christmas, but 12 days beginning on the 25th, and which took in major events and wonderful reminders, faith-wise, of what the Nativity really means, how it was spread out, but certainly the beginning of something, and by no means culminating on the 6th. That's unfortunate, because we're so desperate to get on to the next commercial enterprise. Oh, my heavens, we have Easter bunnies to contend with and various things, Valentines and whatever have you. So let's get away Christmas, then we'll get on to that. That's an example of the rather ruinous influence of excessive commercialization in our culture.
Tell me a little bit more about the figures of these wise men. Each one represented a different part of, practically, of the world, didn't they?
Well, there is so much legend and so much uncertainty of the facts that are at the basis of the legend. We have, for example, John and Mark's Gospel and Luke's Gospel being silent on any mention of the Magi. And certainly the early fathers of the Church did not delve in this theme at all. So we're seeing that in certain times in our history, we begin to sort through other kinds of legends, not necessarily historically proven, but certainly present in one gospel, that surround who these figures were. We truly don't know. We have names that have come down to us, Gaspar, Melchior, Balthasar. We have a legend, especially in Cologne in Germany, that at least one of them, of the three interred in that cathedral, was probably from Africa. But the fact is, we don't know with certainty. We do know that the name Magi probably comes from a term that would relate them to Persia, to that area of the world, and that very likely they belong to a kind of priestly class, a priest-slash-teacher class that was known among the Medes. And so they surface in terms of Persia and in terms of what is called Parthia. And very likely there's the connection. There is no substantial tradition that they were kings. And this is something, again, that has filtered through various strands of legend, but which there it's relatively insubstantial, and most scholars say that that is not a consistent tradition. But the fact that they are wise people, of a possibly three in number, we don't know. Some traditions have them up to 12. Some say they came from Arabia, and the legends all mix and somehow enmesh together in various levels. But the bottom line is, here were people concerned to follow carefully the science that they knew, the stars. These were persons who were aware of the messianic prophecies in Israel. These were persons who were determined to sacrifice everything and take any risk to pursue truth. These were persons who were willing to put their lives at stake, e.g. their encounter with King Herod, who was certainly ready to manipulate and use them. These were people who were open to the Spirit, who were led by the Spirit to that King Christ, who is the fulfillment of all holiness in spirit.
You said they were willing to risk their lives for this pilgrimage to the Christ child. What was their relationship with Herod, and what do we know about this relationship through the Bible?
Well, we're taught, at least from the meager biblical evidence, that where the Magi were glad to pursue the Christ figure, those in Israel, Romans and Jews alike in some cases, were sad about the thought of a Messiah. They didn't want a competitor. They didn't want to be dethroned, as it were, of their power and influence. So we see two very contrasting sets of motives. And wherever you have that strong a clash in motive, eventually it's just a short step to a clash in arms. It's going to lead to violence. So we're told that the Magi very politely maneuvered around Herod, being told in a dream to take another route back to their homeland. And it's interesting that the notion of dream at that time in history was interpreted as a vehicle in which God might communicate something other than appearing visibly and giving you actual words. So there was a great respect for the psychology of the day as well as the science of the day, and a willingness that if they were so told, so informed, so instructed, they would be obedient. And that's a lesson also for us. You know, Tracy, it's very interesting that not only were the motives of Herod and his court and the Magi and their entourage very, very different, but the outcome was also different. We see that Herod, when frustrated, realizing that, yes, very likely this Messiah has been born and those Magi tricked me, immediately set out upon a strategy which involved bloodshed, the slaughter of the holy innocents. There's many, many wonderful aspects of this whole story of the Magi, not only with regard to Herod, but by the fact that even the star which led them, and this is a wonderful symbol, tells us that we have an obligation to be as that star and to lead others to the place where Jesus stays.
I pray.